Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It's December 27th, 2013. Lots of stuff to get to today. Amazing world that we live in. Hard to imagine a crazier set of circumstances than we're finding in Washington and elsewhere. But I hope that for you personally, that those who celebrate Christmas indeed had a very Merry Christmas, that you got everything that you had hoped for and more. But especially, I hope that this holiday season brought you and your family health, peace, and warmth. You know, we live in a tough world, tough times, and I really think that we need to get back to basics, and it's the basics that I think we tend to cherish the most. And certainly, I wish all of you a very happy, healthy, safe, peaceful, and successful new year. We're just a couple days away from 2014. The time keeps going quicker and quicker. But it's always great catching up with you at the end of the week, as we're doing today. It's been a very interesting week, lots of stuff to talk about. In fact, last Saturday morning, I was on Fox and Friends Weekend Edition, and Tucker Carlson interviewed me about the latest lunacy about immigration, but we'll get to that momentarily. But I want to start out by reminding everybody that my background is that of a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Worked for the government for about 30 years. And I think that the folks at ICE today, at DHS, are truly going crazy at how they're being stymied. So don't take your frustration out on the folks who work for the government. I know that lots of folks like to beat up on government employees. They're also citizens, and they understand better than you do just how dangerous the current set of circumstances are. When I say you do, yes, some of you have the background and so forth, but let me modify it and say they understand better than most people the circumstances under which we are currently living. And so it's not their fault. They want to do the job, and I speak to some of these folks on a routine basis. It's the administration and our government that really provide the biggest impediments to true national security and to the enforcement of the immigration laws that at their foundation were intended to achieve two primary goals, protect innocent lives and the jobs of American citizens. And I have been a man on a mission, if you will, ever since 9/11/2001, when here in New York we had a front row seat to a disaster, a calamity, 3,000 people killed, thousands upon thousands injured, incredible damage, and here we are, a dozen years later, and you wouldn't even know that there had been a terrorist attack when you consider how our government is failing on a consistent basis to even give thought, second thought, third thought, to the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission and their recommendations and findings. In fact, I provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission. I've given testimony to, I think we're now up to 15 or 16 congressional hearings. I hope that this new year will provide me with additional opportunities to go to Washington to provide my perspectives. And that's what this program is about, focusing on an issue that, for the most part, mainstream media will not discuss for a variety of reasons. In some cases, I think that perhaps the folks in the news business truly don't understand the real importance of the immigration issue. And in some cases, it's about political ideology. And in other cases, it's about corporate greed. But no matter the cause, the result is the same. It's hard to get informed about immigration. And it's even far more difficult to get our government to do what is essential to look out for the well-being of America and Americans. And by the way, I don't know how this ever got to be described as a conservative issue. It's as much a liberal issue as a conservative issue. In point of fact, immigration, border security, these are American issues, folks. And it's from that perspective that I do this program, as you know, every week on Friday, because I am adamant about providing those perspectives that you're not going to get anywhere else. And in fact, we will shortly be getting into a story that should be front page headlines, but I guarantee you, you won't hear it anywhere else but here. And if you want to do a little bit of reading, find out a little bit more about my background, I'm going to recommend two really good websites to you. And obviously, I'm going to tell you they're good because I'm involved with them. I'm no fool. First of all, my own personal website is michaelcutler.net. My last name is C-U-T-L-E-R, Michael Cutler, one word, .net. And also, I'm very happy to tell you that I continue on, as I hope to, for a long, long time as a senior fellow with a terrific organization known as CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization, or CAPS for short. Their website is capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. They are located, and in the winter I especially like to say this, in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California, almost a stone's throw from the nice, warm Pacific Ocean. And at this time of year, I know they enjoy that climate. I've got some good friends out there, and I know that they're basking in the relative warmth while we're freezing our heinies off here in New York on the East Coast. But in any event, I just wrote an article for them that will serve as the starting point for our conversation this evening. And I will be flying solo tonight. I decided that with so much to talk about, I just wanted to take to my microphone as a solo act, but you're welcome to call in. And the phone number here is 310-982-4145, 310-982-4145. But without any further ado, now that we've given you the websites you need to look at, why don't we start out with a story that, when I tripped over it, blew my mind. I was interviewed by Armstrong Williams, who is a radio talk show host. I'm proud to be a regular on his radio program. I do lots of radio interviews, and I love radio. It gives you an opportunity to have an honest-to-God conversation. TV is fun. It's nice to get my ugly mug out there occasionally. But 3 minutes or 4 minutes or 6 minutes really isn't enough time to get to the issues, at least from my perspective, that we need to get to. So what really thrills me about doing radio is you can't have a conversation. And as I was looking to see what was going on with the article that was being put out as a multi-part interview on various newspapers by Armstrong, I tripped over a story that blew my mind. And, in fact, this was the reason that I wound up on Fox and Friends last week with Tucker Carlson. Believe it or not, and by now those of you that are into immigration, and I suspect that if you're in my audience, you're probably at least somewhat aware of immigration, the latest outrage is that DHS, incredibly, has been delivering smuggled alien, illegal alien minors to their illegal alien parents in the United States. I just want you to stop and let that sink in. If you're not familiar with this story, just stop and think about what's wrong with this story. There's nothing right with this story. This is a story of, you know, bad and badder, bad and worser, you know, as kids might say. First of all, regardless of a person's age, a person is a person is a person. And yes, we need to deal with children differently than we do with adults. We do it in a host of issues. You know, we deal with it with cigarettes and alcohol and driver's licenses and firearms and education requirements. Children are certainly separate and distinct. And as a country and as moral people, we want to look out for the welfare of children. And this story shows how this government has nothing but contempt for the welfare of children, by the way. And I'll explain why momentarily if you don't see the point that I'm going to be getting at. But it's this idea that kids are being smuggled into the United States, and as it turns out, most of what comes across the Mexican border comes across the border being shepherded, smuggled, if you will, by members of the Mexican cartel. These are among the most pernicious SOBs you're going to find anywhere on the planet. They have taken to emulating the tactics of Al-Qaeda. They have been responsible for car bombings in Mexico. They have been responsible for beheadings and mutilations of dead bodies. They have been responsible for rolling the heads of their victims into a bar to make a statement. You know, look what we did to this poor guy. We lopped off his head and we're using it for a bowling ball. You could be next. If that doesn't qualify as an act of terrorism, then I want somebody to explain what an act of terrorism is. Terrorism is a heinous crime, a vicious crime, a bloody crime carried out to intimidate people because of an ideology or some other purpose, obviously not in anybody's best interest, but in the best interest of the dirtbags who do it. And that's what we're dealing with when you talk about the drug trafficking organizations. So everybody knows that a lot of the smuggling that's taking place, whether it's aliens moving across our border, narcotics moving across our border, God forbid, weapons of mass destruction moving across our border, more than likely, you don't need to dig too deeply to find the fingerprints of the cartels and the professional smugglers who've taken control of our border. They're more in control of our border, I would submit, than our valiant Border Patrol agents who have been stymied at every damn turn. Then, you know, every other day we're hearing these BS statistics, oh, the border is secure, it's kind of secure, it's sort of secure, it's a little bit secure. Comprehensive reform, which thank God was killed in the last Congress, but you know, like Freddy Krueger, it's going to come roaring back to life, led by such brilliant, decent leaders as Chuck Schumer and Harry Reid and a whole bunch of them that hate the border, even though a country's first and last line of defense is its border. You know, it just blows my mind, the garbage that we hear coming out of Washington. And it doesn't seem to stop. There is no reason for a military, I would submit, ladies and gentlemen, if you're not willing to secure your own damn borders. What in the world do you do to protect your country when anybody, and I mean anybody, can saunter into this country and do whatever they want, sight unseen, until the day that they blow something up or shoot somebody in the head? The immigration laws, I will go back again to the fundamental purpose for having them, is to protect innocent lives, including the lives of members of the immigrant community who tend to be most at risk from these violent, vicious thugs from around the world. And it's not just about Latin America. It's about Russia. It's about Asia. It's about the Caribbean. It's about Africa. Because violence knows no border. Violence knows no race or ethnicity. Every group of people on God's earth are good, bad, and ugly. You can point to criminals living in every country made up of people from those countries. There isn't a country that is immune from crime or immune from violence. There are sociopaths living amongst us everywhere, of every color, every religion, and every race. This isn't about one against the other. This is against some truly evil people perpetrating crimes against innocent victims. And I don't care if they're black, white, green, purple, or have, you know, blue stripes. So when we hear this nonsense that immigration is about a hatred for Mexicans, that's a lot of bunk. As an immigration agent, I've arrested slime buckets from every country on this planet, every continent on this planet. And that's what those laws are about. So when you hear the politicians saying, oh, the immigration laws, we don't need them, they're not significant. In the old days, that would have been a treasonous statement. It's only because we live in the Twilight Zone that politicians get away with this garbage, and very few members of the broadcast media have the guts to confront them, or the integrity, or the sense, the intelligence to understand. You know, the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel basically started out making a statement that paralleled the testimony I provided. And they said, you know, it goes without saying, if the terrorists couldn't have gotten into the country, they couldn't have attacked us. So what are we doing? We are allowing, we are aiding, we are abetting, encouraging, inducing, and then shielding millions of aliens. And by the way, the word alien isn't a pejorative. It's a legal term. It simply means any person who is not a citizen or national of the United States. And if you can find an insult in that definition, call me up and tell me wherein lies the insult. It's a statement of reality. It's a statement of law. And it's recognized by every country across this planet that you're either a citizen of a country or you're not. And if you go to a country in which you are not a citizen, you are considered by international law to be an alien. It's not an insult. It provides clarity to the debate, and the dirtbags who want the borders dismantled for their personal greed and other objectives are doing everything in their power to minimize what it means to be a citizen of a country. And certainly, citizens of this country are being treated worse than illegal aliens today. And the beat goes on. and the average American sits in their home and does nothing. I mean, if you're listening to the program, I'm going to make a presumption that you're as motivated as I am to do something about it. But we're not doing enough. And so we now have this story where members of DHS, the Department of Homeland Surrender, as I call it, I don't find much security in DHS, the Department of Homeland Surrender is having its agents hand deliver illegal alien children to their illegal alien parents in the United States. If somebody would have written that story 10 years ago, I would have said, you're out of your mind. This thing belongs in the science fiction section of the library. But under this administration, and by the way, we haven't had a winning administration on immigration since Jimmy Carter, because that was when this BS started about not being able to use the word illegal alien to describe an illegal alien. So, I mean, it goes back a long way. And for those conservatives out there, and if I irritate you or I anger you, I don't care who I irritate or anger. I have yet to aggravate my quota. Reagan gave us the first amnesty. And for those of you that buy into his nonsense, oh, my God, it was a terrible thing. I had no idea. He knew damn well what he was doing because they didn't hire a single agent to deal with the onslaught of a workload that they knew would many times over increase the burden on the agents who couldn't do the job already. You don't take somebody on a respirator and say to them, by the way, Charlie, here's your new sneakers. You're running the marathon tomorrow, and you better win. Immigration has always had a problem of a lack of staffing, a lack of resources, a lack of leadership, a lack of commitment to the mission. You don't wind up with 20 or 30 or 35 million, God knows what the real number is. I'm tired of the lies coming out of Washington. You don't wind up with so many millions of illegal aliens unless your government wants it to happen. Any other time or place, this would not be possible. But under the current set of alleged leaders in Washington, with a couple of notable exceptions, and I will give a tip of the hat to some of those leaders momentarily, other than them, no one else is holding the line, holding the feet to the fire on these politicians. And when I hear politicians stand around and say, well, we're going to lose the Latino vote, we have to do what, it's a lie. First of all, the Latino vote, that concept is racism. It is profiling. How in the world can you know who someone's going to vote to once you know their last name is Garcia or Rodriguez, or for that matter, Goldstein or Cohen? You know, the Jewish vote. Baloney. Every Jew votes alike. Yeah, we know what they're like. Every black votes alike. Every Protestant or every Catholic. It doesn't work that way. We are a nation of individuals. And when you start lumping people together and talk about the Latino vote or the black vote or the Jewish vote, what you're doing is engaging in a heinous form of profiling. You know, if a police officer goes out and stops a car because it's a white kid up in Harlem in the middle of the night and he's got out-of-town plates on this beautiful new BMW and he's on a block where there's been 20 drug arrests in the last 2 weeks, the kid's going to get stopped. The cop is profiling, absolutely. I was part of those teams working with the police as part of the drug task force for half my career. You can read more about me at michaelcutler.net. You can see that I've been out there. This isn't a hypothetical exercise for me. But the bottom line is that you go out there and you recognize that this kid is kind of out of place. Why is he here? It's going to the supermarket and finding a can of soup in the freezer chest where there's ice cream, and you say, Jesus, this doesn't belong here. Something's wrong. So you look at a kid who is in a neighborhood where you wouldn't normally expect him to be at an odd hour of the night, and what you're doing is taking into account his appearance, where he is, when he is, what he's doing. There's a whole bunch of stuff, and it does fall under the broad category of profiling. And the journalists on Sunday who go around clucking like a bunch of hens, oh, my God, profiling is awful. And then they go to the next story, and they'll talk about the mythical Latino vote. The disconnect between reality and what is spewed in the media is mind-numbing. Mind-numbing. And I will tell you, we have to call out the journalists, so-called, when they do this nonsense. The idea that you have illegal aliens running around the country, and we can't call them illegal aliens. The idea that we're told, well, if we would legalize them, it would make things better. How in the world would it make it better? We can't find enough work for Americans now. And every year, over $200 billion is getting wired out of the United States by foreign workers. And according to the UN and the World Bank, if our government, God forbid, should enact comprehensive reform, the remittances would increase drastically. And if you look at the multiplier effect, as it is, $200 billion is the same as increasing our deficit by more than a half trillion, because this is money that leaves the economy. It doesn't get spent or invested in the economy, which generates more business. That was the whole idea, supposedly, behind the economic stimulus package. This is money that's just vacuumed right out of the economy. So this is the nonsense we're listening to. So you have immigration agents aiding and abetting, encouraging, inducing, harboring, shielding, and transporting illegal aliens. They know that the child is an illegal alien, and they transport the illegal alien to the parent, acting as an employee, if you will, of the drug trafficking organization. And they're not taking any action against the illegal alien. You know, if they went to the illegal alien and said, hey, we got your kid, and by the way, where's your identity documents? Oh, you're here illegally? Slap the cuffs on them and seek their deportation. That would make sense. The whole family goes home together. You want family reunification? That's a swell way to do family reunification, because I would submit to you folks that anybody who would put their child in the custody of the cartels should be criminally prosecuted for the reckless endangerment of the child. Imagine if you were caught speeding on some highway. You know, you're shooting up I-95. You're going down the Pacific Coast Highway. You're going cross-country on I-80. And you're going 90 miles an hour, and the police pull you over, and they see you've got a 5-year-old kid bouncing around in the back seat, not wearing a seatbelt, not secured in a car seat. You're going to get arrested in most states and charged with the reckless endangerment of that child. And you know what? You should be, because that's crazy. And we do that. But here you have illegal aliens whose identities and ultimate reasons for coming here are known only to them, not to us, and saying to them, here's your kid, Merry Christmas. I really wonder if the DHS agents were ordered to wear Santa Claus get-ups when they did this. It makes no sense. When I was an immigration agent, and this is part of the reason why I suspect the other side doesn't much like me, because I have institutional memory about how the job was done. I started working for the old Immigration and Naturalization Service back in 1971. If you went out and did an investigation and knocked on a neighbor's door, maybe you were checking to see if a couple was really living together because the wife filed an application for the husband to get a green card, or the husband filed an application for the wife to get a green card, we used to go out and investigate those things. We're lucky if they do interviews these days. No one investigates anything anymore. Whatever is put down on an application is treated like gospel truth. But if I knocked on a neighbor's door and said to the guy, I'm interested in that couple that lives next door to you in apartment 3F, do you know these photographs? Do you recognize the people? If they said, gee, I know who the woman is, I've never seen the man, well, maybe they're not living together. So you take a statement. Well, how long have you lived here? How long do you know them? How often do you see her? And then you get to the real critical question, because you had to identify who that person was that you interviewed. And as an immigration agent, ladies and gentlemen, part of the identity of the person that you're interviewing is, what is your immigration status in the United States? If the guy said, well, I was born in Brooklyn, New York, or I was born in, you know, Steubenville, Ohio, or fine. Do you have any ID to show me? Do you have a driver's license? And you would try to get the best possible information to figure out whether or not the guy was who he claimed he is. First of all, it goes to the credibility of the information. Information being secured by somebody who you can't verify, you have to wonder if there's something going on, and it's not fair to the investigation to use unreliable information. So the first issue is, can you trust the information that this person is giving you? And part of the way you make a determination about that, can you verify who the guy is? The second thing is, as an immigration agent, if the guy turned out to be an illegal alien, I was supposed to indicate in my report what remedial action I took as an agent. You've encountered an illegal alien, Agent Cutler. What did you do with him, as my boss might have said to me? Well, if it turned out that the guy said, look, I'm married, I've got a wife, here's my marriage license, here's the application she filed for me. In fact, she's sitting in the living room and the wife comes out and says, oh, yeah, I filed an application for my husband. And then she shows you the receipt and you'd make a note in the file that you interviewed both the husband and wife and the wife had just filed a petition for her husband. No problem. You're not going to arrest the guy. You're going to say, good luck. I hope things work out for you. Have a nice day. And you leave. If the guy was an illegal alien, we would take him into custody. And you did this so that there was a sense of integrity to the system. See, I think that we should target for major effort the people who were convicted of crimes and so forth. That makes sense. That's what I call a triage approach to law enforcement. But that doesn't mean that if you're here illegally, we should ignore you, which is what the administration is doing. Well, actually, it wouldn't be as bad if they ignored them. They're now looking to give identity documents, even though they can't verify their identities and permission to work at a time when Americans can't find jobs. I mean, this is a level of betrayal that blows my mind on so many levels. But as an immigration agent back in the 70s and 80s and 90s, you had to account for an illegal alien that you encountered in the street. I'd love to see what these reports look like that are being filed today by immigration agents. We dropped off the child with who? Do we even know that the person receiving the child is really a blood relative? Does anybody know anything about anybody? And when people realize they can get away with it, smuggling their children into America, more and more people will go to the cartels. And more children are going to be put at risk. I really wonder if DHS, the Department of Homeland Surrender, has the shred of integrity in anywhere to say, hey, I wonder if we're finding any children being abducted by the cartel. I mean, what could go wrong if you have a young teenage girl being transported by people who are involved with criminal activities? Oops, she never made it. Did they force her into prostitution? You know, we have found young teenage girls working in houses of prostitution throughout my career because they would be dragged into those hooker houses because the clientele, mostly young men who came here without their wives or girlfriends, would go to those joints at night. And the way you shut them down is working with the public moral squad and raid the places so that illegal aliens would get arrested by us and the cops would arrest the hookers. So if you're an illegal alien, you would think, gee whiz, I better not go to that joint because immigration might show up. Today, immigration never shows up to do anything. If you go to the ICE website, folks, and look at their news releases, you may find four or five immigration stories and 30 stories about immigration agents going after kiddie porn. Now look, I think anybody who can produce kiddie porn, abuse children, do anything to kids, needs to be hung from the nearest tree quickly. I have no problem with it. But think of all the agencies that could become involved in doing investigations into those who produce kiddie porn. You could be looking at the FBI, you could be looking at city and state police, you could be looking at the postal inspectors. We have a couple of thousand immigration agents when you're done with all the other jobs that they do at ICE, enforcing customs laws and other laws. So you take this precious resource that's overwhelmed, and you give them busy work that has nothing to do with immigration law enforcement. That is what is being done by this administration to obfuscate what's really happening. And what's really happened is while you were sleeping and while I was sleeping, well, actually, I haven't been sleeping. I'm up at night writing commentaries and trying to get more and more information compiled. They're dismantling our borders. They're dismantling our immigration system where there is no integrity. And this is just the latest example. It's the latest example of the lunacy that passes for immigration law enforcement in the United States today. And in fact, I wrote a commentary for the for the CAPS website, and I think it's an important commentary. I wish you would take the time to go visit capsweb.org. The name of my article is DHS and Alien Smugglers, Partners in Crime. And I can't even imagine what it must be like for an ICE agent to be told by his boss, well, we just arrested some cartel members. They have these dozen kids in their control. You're going to have to get these kids to their parents. How in the world is this consistent with the oath of office that they took that said they will uphold the Constitution and enforce the immigration laws. You're handing over children to illegal aliens who shouldn't be in our country, and you're walking away without taking any action against those people. Why? Why in the world are we willing to do this as a country when there's not enough work to go around, not enough jobs going around? And think of what this does. The illegal alien whose kid gets delivered to them by that ICE agent is immediately going to get on a telephone, make a phone call, and say, hey, you're not going to believe what just happened. These two nice young men from ICE, or this young man and young woman from ICE, knocked on my door, and I thought, oh, my God, we're in trouble. And they handed over our child, and they said, have a nice day, and they left. Don't worry about running the border. See, because do you know the magic number as to how many times an alien has to try to run the border to get into the United States successfully? Does anybody out there know what the answer is? Because I have an answer to the question. Here's my question for the day. How many times does an illegal alien have to run the border to be able to enter the United States? The answer, boys and girls, is one time more than the number of times that they get stopped by the U.S. Border Patrol. If you are tenacious enough, you will succeed. You know, if at first you don't succeed, try again. That applies to illegal aliens. Because almost every time that I encountered an illegal alien and you asked them what happened, they would almost always tell you, oh, we got stopped by the patrol, and 3 hours later, 8 hours later, the next day, whatever, we did it again and we got through. Or, well, we got grabbed three times and then we got through. Because at the end of the day, the last three or four words of the sentences were, and we got through. So now we're being told, once you get here, don't even worry. In the old days, there was always this concern that once you come through, you still can't sleep easy because immigration might bump into you. Just like the guy living in that apartment next to the couple that filed for a green card, and you knock on the door, and there he is, and you say, okay, pal, you're coming with us downtown. And you put the handcuffs on him and took him downtown. So the word was out. If you're in the wrong place on the wrong day, doesn't matter that you made your way to New York or Chicago or Omaha, Nebraska, you could face deportation. Today, it's not happening. Today, it's not happening. And then you look at a hearing that was held 2 weeks ago, and we're going to talk about a couple of my heroes. Of course, one of my all-time favorite heroes, a little story, and I don't know if Lou is listening this evening, but if you're listening, Lou, I know you're going to get a chuckle out of this. Congressman Lou Barletta from Hazleton, Pennsylvania, had been the mayor of Hazleton. Those of you familiar with what I've been involved with know that I was his final witness when he got sued by the ACLU for being the first mayor in the United States to enact immigration ordinances, because under the George W. Bush administration, when he went to DHS and said to them, we have Dominican drug gangsters in my town and they're killing people, can you help me? Lou tells the story. In fact, it's on C-SPAN. We did an event at Daytona Beach at Embry-Riddle University. It's an 80-minute video. I'd love for you to go watch the video. Lou is a very engaging character. He's an interesting guy, and I'm proud to consider him a personal friend. But Lou said he went there, and they said, well, we don't have the resources, so we're not going to help you. But here's a very nice mug with a badge on it. That was the help he got from the Department of Homeland Surrender under George W., and I never thought I would wax nostalgic for that. But yes, Mr. Obama, you have made me feel that as bad as it was under George W., you've made it worse. But in any event, Lou actually reached out to me right after I was on Fox News and last weekend, and you know, we had a phone conversation about the madness that passes for this administration's policies on immigration and a host of other issues. But about 2 weeks ago, this past Thursday, yesterday, there was a committee hearing by the House Judiciary Committee and then the Subcommittee on Immigration and Border Security, and it was chaired by Chairman Goodlatte, who chairs the Judiciary Committee, and Chairman Gowdy, who chairs the Immigration Subcommittee in the House of Representatives. And Jason Chaffetz and Ted Poe and a number of the other members really did an amazing job. But my hat is off to the three in particular, and that's Jason Chaffetz, Trey Gowdy, Bob Goodlatte, not necessarily in that order, folks. because it was an almost four-hour hearing. It was a marathon hearing. I've done a bunch of them. Hearings don't generally run much more than a couple of hours. This hearing was almost twice as long as the typical hearing, and the questions that they hammered the people from the administration who were brought in as witnesses was terrific. And what came out of this, because the concern was that we have members of the Mexican cartels applying for political asylum as an embedding tactic, the same as the terrorists have done. And they come here either fleeing from the violence of their competitors back in Mexico, or they're coming here to continue the crimes against their competitors who are now operating inside the United States. This is what happens when you don't secure your border and when you provide opportunities for people to file applications for immigration benefits that they're not entitled to. And I was really impressed. I watched the entire hearing. It was streaming. And really, folks, I know hearings might seem boring to some of you, but, you know, yes, it's more fun, I guess, to watch a baseball game or a football game. I'm not much of a sports guy. But this is about your future. This is about the future of your children, and this is about the future of your children's children, and so forth. This is about America's survival. We are living through a historically dangerous era. You look at the dangers that are out there. Our economic meltdown certainly creates a national security crisis for America. What we are doing with immigration, despite the BS you're hearing, is making it worse, not better. We're being told it would help the economy. It would not. And by the way, here is how I can prove to you that comprehensive reform would be bad for the average American and fabulous for the tiny, teeny fraction of 1% who fly around the world in their private airliners. You know, the folks who have a 757 or a 767 or whatever. I mean, the average American has to figure out if they have enough money to gas up their gas tank to take a trip somewhere. And you have, and by the way, there's nothing wrong with being successful and being wealthy. That's what free enterprise is supposed to enable. But we really don't have free enterprise when you have the super wealthy, the folks making hundreds of millions of dollars a year, able to make whatever campaign contributions they want to make, because these aren't campaign contributions, folks. They're legalized bribes. If federal agents and civil servants in general are not allowed to accept a glass of soda or a cup of coffee, because the idea is that you don't want them treating anybody differently, what do you think happens when a politician gets tons of money from special interest groups or corporations or the super wealthy? I'm doing a major article for a quarterly publication known as The Social Contract. And I'm very proud because I've written a bunch of articles for them. And I came up with an idea. I was on the phone with their editor, Wayne, and I said, you know, Wayne, you really should devote some time to the death of the middle class. Well, he liked the idea so much, and the people at The Social Contract liked the idea so much. That is going to be the focus of their winter edition that's in the works right now. I believe it's heading over to the printer sometime in the next week or so. And I will be posting a copy of my article and links to the magazine once it's out. So, you know, go to michaelcutler.net. And you can reach out to me and contact me, by the way, through my website as well, because I think it's important that we get this message out there, because if they're not going to cover it on the news networks, I'll cover it here, and we can create what I've come to call a bucket brigade of truth by having everybody pass the information along. But in any event, I wrote this very extensive article about the impact that immigration is having on the middle class. And one of the things that I looked at that absolutely blew my mind is the amount of money being spent by lobbyists who have been pushing for comprehensive immigration reform. Since 2007, you better sit down, folks, and put on your seatbelt, because I think you're going to be astonished. I mean, it took the wind out of my sails. I knew it was a big number. The question was how big the number is. Apparently, there is a think tank that came up with a number, and CNBC thought that this was so compelling, they wrote a report about it and said that the lobbying for comprehensive reform is largely one-sided because of the amount of money that has been pumped into this disaster. Since 2007, I wish I had the sound effect for a drum roll, like the telethon, you know? More than 1.5 billion, with a B, $1.5 billion has been spread around Washington like manure to convince politicians to vote for comprehensive reform. I would love to know how much of that money went into the campaigns of the people like Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, Harry Reid, all the usual suspects who were spewing their venom and saying, oh, we need this for the economy. Nobody gives away that kind of money, especially the very wealthy. You don't become wealthy by just throwing money out the window. You become wealthy by making investments. And to them, that money was well spent as an investment because they know completely how much they would be able to capitalize on comprehensive reform by driving down the wages of American workers. One of my former colleagues sent me an article written by a guy who claims to have gotten a STEM degree, science, technology, engineering, and math. Remarkable. And he said, well, there is no shortage of programmers. The people that say that there's no shortage are right, but American programmers aren't as good as Indian programmers. Could you imagine a worse example of profiling and bigotry? If you want to talk about individuals and say, yes, so-and-so is a programmer from India, and he's better than anyone I've ever met, I agree. Charlie Smith is an American programmer. He's better than anyone. Or he's the dumbest guy I've ever met. Oh, well, that's fine, as individuals. But when you start, you know, painting with this broad brush, oh, American programmers, oh, no, no, don't compare them to people from India. That's racism, and it's a lie. It's a lie. I go back again to the way that profiling is done by people on the other side of the argument, and they do it very blithely, innocent face, big wide. Oh, but isn't that the way it is? No, it's not. America went to the moon numerous times over 40 years ago, and no one has yet done that. It's making headlines because China just landed a robot on the moon. Does that compare with Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin? I mean, come on, folks. So you have people out there spewing utter BS, and you have to wonder how much they were paid or what their real agenda is. There was an article that I find very disturbing, and this came out of an ICE website article about an individual by the name of Nader Modanlo, who came to the United States in 1979 from his native Iran. And he attended college in the United States, got an engineering degree. And then guess what? He just pleaded guilty to exporting illegally technology to Iran that enabled Iran to launch a satellite. And you have to ask yourself, might he have been a sleeper? I don't know. I haven't seen his immigration file, but somebody at immigration should be asking the question. Because 1979, for those of you who maybe forgot about this, but I certainly didn't because I was involved with what we tried to do in the aftermath of it, was the year that the Iranian quote-unquote students overran the U.S. Embassy in Tehran, Iran. And we know that when Robert Mueller was the head of the FBI on a number of occasions, he went before the House Immigration Subcommittee and other committees where I've testified and other committees in general and spoke about his concerns about sleeper agents. A sleeper agent is somebody from a foreign country who one way or the other, by running the border or getting a visa or going to school or whatever, enters the United States and hides in plain sight for years, sometimes many years, waiting for a phone call, and they're told, today's the day you got to act. It may be to carry out an attack. It may be to do something in terms of espionage, and that's what sleepers are. Now, I don't know if that's the case with this guy, but according to the ICE website, the ICE news release, this guy has now been found guilty of exporting illegally American technology that was essential to the successful launch of an Iranian rocket carrying a satellite into orbit. You have to wonder if we've connected the dots here. If anybody looked at the immigration file and said, hey, how did this guy get to have a green card? How did this guy get to be a United States citizen? Is there anything in his background that showed that when he first came here, That's the main reason he came, because the timing is interesting. And in law enforcement, we have a saying that if you see a coincidence, look again. So I'm looking again. You have a guy who came here in 1979, the year that the embassy got overran. And I will tell you, here in the United States, they told us, go out there and try to find those Iranians. And it was a funny situation, not funny really, not funny ha-ha, but funny as in sick to my stomach funny, because we had no addresses to work with. When aliens are admitted into the United States, and I did that job for 4 years, you ask for an address. And if they didn't have an address, our bosses would say, well, put down some hotel in New York. Whether or not anybody even knew if the guy was going to a hotel in New York. What's the point to requiring a U.S. address if you don't even know if the address exists or the guy plans to be there? And that was what we found with the Iranians. That's what we found when the 9/11 Commission looked at the terrorists. And you know what? They're still doing it. We still don't know where these folks are going to. And if you have to go look for them, lots of luck. There's some place in the United States. They went to a hotel in New York. Boy, that narrows it down. How many hotels are there in New York? How many grains of sand are on the beach? We're looking for the one grain of sand. And maybe the guy stayed there 3 days, checked out, and nobody knows where he went after that. You know, it used to be that they would make this big announcement, and those of you old enough to remember this, if you have enough gray hair, you remember, they used to always have those public service announcements in January saying, February is Alien Reporting Month. Be certain to go to the post office, and the alien filled out a form, and if my rusty brain remembers it correctly, the form was an I-53. And at immigration, we used to have on top of our file cabinets, because this was in the day of paper records, this goes back to the 70s, boxes and boxes, of, I mean, just piled up in alphabetical order, the address report cards of the aliens. And half the time you could actually find somebody because everybody knew that if you screwed around, somebody might come looking. Today they know this game of hide and seek is not being played. The aliens don't even have to hide because there's nobody seeking. They eliminated the requirement of the alien address report being routinely filed in February. We have no idea who is here. We have no idea why they're here. We have no idea about anything. We don't know when they got here, but the administration can't wait to give them all a pathway to citizenship led by Chuck Schumer and the rest of the Gang of Eight, or the Eight Gangsters, as I've called them. This is how insane the whole deal is. Now, I put out a news release earlier today, and I said that I was going to provide information that nobody else has been talking about. So here's the deal. A couple of days, the Department of Homeland Security, Office of Inspector General, this is the internal affairs folks, put out a report. And this is on the employment-based fifth preference, what they call the EB-5 program, to give residency to aliens who invest at least $500,000 or possibly $1 million in a business in the United States that ostensibly is done to create jobs in America. You know, we keep hearing immigration creates jobs. Nobody says immigration creates competitors for jobs. Immigration is going to create, and when you ask people, it's like a statement of faith. How do you know? Well, they say. Have you ever met anybody whose name is They Say? You know, Mr. Say, how are you? Is your first name They? They Say. Okay. Now, I'm reading to you from, I guess this is part of the letter. This is the executive summary. This is the executive summary from that Inspector General report. Now, this is word for word what's in the report. Remember, we are giving people green cards ostensibly because they're willing to pump in between $500,000 to $1 million in an investment to create jobs in America. But there's some problems with the program. The Inspector General is Internal Affairs. This isn't the guy that writes the tabloid for the news for the supermarkets. These are the people that are supposed to make certain that there is integrity to what the government does. They look for corruption. Okay? They look for fraud. They look for abuse. Inspector General, Internal Affairs. Catch this. Here's how the executive summary starts out. In 1980, Congress created the United States Citizenship and Immigration Services Immigrant Investor Program, also known as the Employment-Based Fifth Preference Program. The program's intent was to stimulate the U.S. economy through job creation and capital investment by foreign investors. 3 years later, the Department of Commerce, Justice, and State, the Judiciary and Related Agencies Appropriations Act of 1993 created the Regional Center Pilot Program for pooling investor money in a defined industry and geographic area. Our audit objective was to determine whether the USCIS employment-based fifth preference regional center program as administered and managed is administered and managed effectively. Simple premise: is this program living up to what it's supposed to do? And here's what they said. Several conditions prevent USCIS, that's United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, from administering and managing the employment-based fifth preference regional center program effectively. Specifically, number one, the laws and regulations governing the program do not give USCIS the authority to deny or terminate a regional center's participation in the employment-based fifth preference program based on fraud or national security concerns. So even if they find that there's fraud or that it's undermining national security, USCIS can't do anything about it. Think about that. Number two, the program extends beyond current USCIS mission to secure America's promise as a nation of immigrants. And number three, USCIS is unable to demonstrate the benefits of foreign investment into the U.S. economy. Additionally, USCIS has difficulty ensuring the integrity of the employment-based fifth preference regional center programs. USCIS does not always ensure that regional centers meet all program eligibility requirements, and USCIS officials differently interpret and apply code of federal regulations and policies. Furthermore, when external parties inquire about program activities, USCIS did not always document their decisions and responses to these inquiries, making the employment-based fifth preference regional center program appear vulnerable to perceptions of internal and external influences. Does this not take your breath away? Immigration is like a walk through the park, and you keep picking up little rocks and stones and leaves, and every time you pick it up, you find smelly, rotting manure. 2 weeks ago, Trey Gowdy and Bob Goodlatte demonstrated the leadership and integrity expected of good members of Congress, and I laud their efforts, because I'm sure that they met resistance. So it took leadership and integrity, and as we like to say in Brooklyn, lots of chutzpah to do the right thing. I'm proud of the work they're doing. Jeff Sessions, by the way, Chuck Grassley over in the Senate, also great leaders, and their constituents should be proud and know that they're being duly represented by them. But boy, can I give you a list of others who make a mockery of our government and the needs of our people and the Constitution. But Goodlatte and Gowdy, 2 weeks ago, were shining like stars for going after political asylum fraud, which undermines national security. Well, here's another topic I hope they take up. Here's another topic we the people need to start demanding. You know, I get emails constantly, folks, and the emails are about, we got to fight against comprehensive reform, and I've gone out there and I've written commentaries, and I remember in 07, when they were pushing comprehensive reform, I wrote a commentary for the Washington Times, and I called an immigration bill a no-go. Actually, the editors there gave it a title. I wasn't sure what the heck to call it. But I compared the hearings, and I had done a bunch of them, and other people had testified before a bunch, and I compared those hearings with the countdown for the launch of the Space Shuttle Challenger. And I said the purpose for the hearings was for the experts to provide evidence as to whether or not they should go forward with legislation. The purpose for the countdown was for the experts, the technicians, scientists, engineers, and others, to provide their insight as to whether or not it was safe and appropriate to launch. And we all know what happened in January of 06 when they launched Challenger on that frigid morning in Florida, and the O-rings failed, and the whole thing, you know, blew up, killing seven astronauts and destroying one of the space shuttles. And You know, I saw an apt analogy there. And I said they should call comprehensive reform the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act, the idea that you would be giving millions of people identity documents without being able to verify their identities. Runs contrary to common sense and the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. But we need to push for more than simply holding the line and saying, no comprehensive reform. And then, of course, John Boehner came out and said, well, if we do anything, it'll be done piecemeal. And I wrote an article that said, how do you eat an elephant? Obviously, one bite at a time. The point is, we need to go beyond that. We need to go beyond that. And, in fact, what we should be pushing for is not just that they don't enact comprehensive reform, but that the administration be compelled to enforce the immigration laws. The primary purpose of those laws, again, I'll keep on reiterating it till I turn blue in the face and I no longer have breath in my lungs, is to protect innocent lives and the jobs of Americans. That means that by the current administration policies, American and others, including even illegal aliens. I don't want anybody. People are losing their lives because of the failures of this administration to carry out its mission and live up to the Constitution and their oaths of office and enforce the damn immigration laws. And Americans are losing jobs, and the economy is losing the remittances, hundreds of billions of dollars. And we've also seen examples of aliens involved with espionage, involved with terrorism, being educated and trained in the United States because there's no integrity to the process. You would have thought after 9/11 that would have ended. In fact, it's really interesting because Leslie Stahl interviewed Susan Rice on 60 Minutes yesterday, not yesterday, but last Sunday, this weekend. Of course, they'll have another program, but last Sunday's show, and they were talking about the NSA. And Leslie Stahl said, how do you justify it? And she said, well, since 9/11, there's been no terrorist attacks. And Leslie Stahl neglected to ask Susan Rice about the Boston Marathon bombing, because the Tsarnaev brothers, apparently, I'm not making an allegation, but someone should investigate it, certainly calls into question whether or not they were entitled to political asylum, because when you claim political asylum, you claim credible fear. If you return me to my home country, I will face persecution or worse because of my race, religion, ethnicity, tribal affiliation, or political views. Well, as soon as the Tsarnaev family got political asylum, they promptly hopped on an airplane and went back to Russia, the country from whence they came. It makes things kind of iffy, doesn't it? So time and again, we see the same BS where we're being told, you know, there's no integrity to the system. It keeps on coming up again and again and again. And so I wrote another commentary that I believe will be posted shortly at CAPS, capsweb.org. It's certainly up on my own website, michaelcutler.net. And I called it Comprehensive Immigration Reform Won't Fly. And I talked about how when a pilot prepares for flight, and as a kid I did a little single-engine flying. I never got my license. It's always a matter of not enough time or not enough money. But I did log 20-odd hours of solo flight time. Great experience flying, by the way. And the first thing you do, I don't care how beautiful the blue sky is and the white little clouds look so fluffy and the sun is shining brightly and the destination you're planning to go to is so enticing, if the airplane isn't airworthy, you don't go up. Spend about a half hour on the ground, walking around the airplane, making certain that the landing gear is okay and the engine is okay and the fuel is okay and the control surfaces are right. And then you get into the cockpit, you fire up the engine, and you check the fuel pumps and the magnetos and the instruments and the avionics, and you put it through a thorough check. Then only after you're convinced that the airplane is 100%, not unlike that countdown for the Space Shuttle Challenger or any rocket launch, you know, that's why the countdown is there, when everything checks out 100%, then you go down that runway and head off into the wild blue yonder, as the saying goes. But not until then. And time and again, we have seen instances where OIG reports, this one that I just quoted from today is only the most recent of a long line. There's a library of reports like that showing how disastrous, dysfunctional, screwed up, inept, and incompetent U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services is. It shows how all of these component agencies of DHS are, the Department of Homeland Surrender, well named, I think. But let me just read to you a couple of headlines. And this goes back again to U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. This, by the way, folks, is the agency that would have to administer comprehensive reform. So, November 2013, ABC News reported, exclusive, U.S. may have let in dozens of terrorists as refugees. Think about that. July 13, 2011, 2 years earlier, Washington Times, here's the headline, visa reviewed to find those who overstayed, aims to find any terrorists, any would-be terrorists. Okay. November 21st, 2013, Washington Times, Mexican drug cartels exploit asylum system by claiming credible fear. That was what became the theme to that hearing that was conducted by Chairman Goodlatte and Gowdy. And that, in fact, that was their headline, December 12, 2013, the title for the hearing, and you can go to my website and find it, michaelcutler.net. Asylum abuses that overwhelming our borders. So time and again, we've seen the same thing. We've seen the same thing. Terrorists, criminals, all kinds of people getting immigration benefits. So rather than just saying, let's push back against comprehensive reform, I have a novel suggestion, folks. Here's my suggestion. And I'm going to ask you a favor. Make a commitment, not to me, but to yourself, because at the end of the day, we are responsible for ourselves, aren't we? What I want you to do, folks, is to make your New Year's resolution, whatever others you add, make this your number one resolution, to become actively involved in our government. The congressional elections are looming large on the horizon. The congressional elections are going to make all the difference in the world in 2014. Usually, midterm elections aren't a big deal. Given this administration, it's a big deal. We need people in Congress, and I don't care if they're with the Hopping Kangaroo Party, who are truly willing to hold the administration's feet to the fire. They are taking us down the wrong way on a one-way street, and we're picking up speed, and this is dangerous. Dangerous beyond words. Dangerous of how do you go to sleep at night? Dangerous. We need to start to demand, not that they don't enact comprehensive reform, because the only thing comprehensive about comprehensive reform, it would leave virtually no illegal alien out. It's kind of like George W.'s old Leave No Child Behind program. This is Leave No Illegal Alien Behind program. We should start to demand that our borders really be secured, not kind of a sort of a little bit like Chuck Schumer. Oh, we'll have operation control over 90% of high traffic areas. Have you ever heard anything more inane than that? So you identify the high traffic area, you flood it with resources, and all the smugglers have to do is move 10 miles down the border to find a place where they're not, you know, loading in all the resources. That's like saying you got a bunch of holes in the bottom of your boat. We'll sort of kind of a little bit once in a while, plug one of the holes, sort of, and we'll ignore the other 15 holes. Well, here's a question that obviously Schumer and company have trouble figuring out. How many holes do you need in the bottom of your rowboat for it to wind up at the bottom of the lake? All of these holes need to be plugged, folks. Not next year or 5 years from now or 8 years from now. On December 7th, 1941, the United States was attacked at Pearl Harbor. If you look it up, you'll be, I think, surprised, maybe, to find that there were about 3,000, mostly U.S. servicemen, killed that day. Roughly the same number of casualties that we suffered on 9/11. It took this country working in concert with its allies all of 44 months to end the war. To achieve that amazing, our country, working with our allies, built fleets of airplanes that had never existed before. Fighter planes, bombers, you name it, we built it. Brand new technology. Go into the aviation books and look at what was flying in 1939, and then go to 42 and 43 and look at some of those airplanes that the free world turned out. My all-time favorite, the P-51 Mustang, the B-29 bomber. I mean, we can go down this whole list. The Spitfire that the Brits turned. I mean, beautiful airplanes with capabilities that couldn't have been imagined 5 years earlier. I mean, these were revolutionary, not evolutionary, changes in technology. We built fleets of ships that had never existed before. submarines, aircraft carriers, destroyers, PT, whatever it was. We built atom bombs all in 44 months. In 1993, the United States was attacked not once but twice on our soil, in both instances by men from the Middle East who had gamed the visa process and the immigration benefits program. A guy by the name of Kanzi, Pakistani, applies for political asylum, shoots up the CIA, kills two CIA officers, wounds three others, and a month later, first attack at the World Trade Center, including a guy by the name of, my memory is failing me, but you had people, Ramzi Youssef is the guy I was trying to think of. Ramzi Youssef got political asylum. Mahmoud Abu Alima got agricultural amnesty. Chuck Schumer, hi Chuck, if you're listening, which I doubt, was one of the principal authors of the agricultural amnesty program, which, by the way, appeared in that Senate bill again. It wasn't bad enough that they did it to us the first time. We're going to not learn from our lessons and do it again. But Mahmoud Abu Alima got agricultural amnesty. He was one of the key players, again, at the World Trade Center bombing. He claimed that he had planted beans in Florida, when in reality the only thing he ever planted was a bomb in the garage of the World Trade Center. And that was more than 20 years ago. In 1997, May 20th, I was asked to testify before my first congressional hearing about visa fraud and immigration benefit fraud. I spent this evening talking to you about immigration benefit fraud. So midway between those two terrorist attacks, 93 and 9/11, Congress holds a hearing. Lamar Smith led the charge, and the hearing, Henry Hyde as well. He was the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee at the time, the late Henry Hyde. Everybody knew that visa fraud, immigration benefit fraud, enabled the terrorists to enter the country and enabled them to embed themselves. No secret. No action taken by the Clinton administration. 9/11 is the result. Here we are again. We've had other terrorist attacks that, thank God, didn't happen, mostly because of the ineptitude of the terrorists. Whether it was Captain Underpants who tried to blow up an airplane in the skies over Detroit on Christmas Day, whether it was a Times Square bomber, the bomb didn't detonate, thank God, it kind of smoldered. So understand that we are at risk. And then you saw the Boston Marathon bombing. Government didn't prevent it. They could have figured out something was wrong with these guys. Nothing happened. They were warned by the Saudis as well as by the Russians. No action taken. This is not national security. It's a travesty. And in Boston, people paid with their lives. People paid with their health. The people that were injured, some of them will never be the same. They lost limbs as a terrorist attack. It was relatively small scale, but don't tell that to a victim. Joseph Stalin, interestingly, and the quote Stalin of all people, said that a million dead was a statistic, that one dead was a tragedy. There are lots of tragedies being carried out by people who have gamed the immigration process, who have been able to run our border. I had lunch yesterday with a good friend, Don Rosenberg. I wish I didn't know Don. Not because he's not a nice guy. He's a kindred spirit. But his son, who was 25 years old, a law student, on a motorcycle, minding his own business, got run over by an illegal alien from El Salvador. And in trying to flee, the guy ran over Don's son three times. The first impact would not have done serious harm to him. According to witnesses, it was when he backed up and tried to flee that he ran him over three times with the car. Don't tell Don that it was only one death. Don't tell me that either. This keeps happening again and again and again. Congressman Steve King has called attention to it, and he gets ridiculed for trying to do the right thing. This isn't about being a Democrat or a Republican. A point of fact, for whatever it's worth, if you know me, you know this. I've been registered as a Democrat my whole life. I'm a labor guy. My dad was a construction worker. He was a plumber. He and my mom will always be my biggest heroes. My mom came here as an immigrant, as a teenager, ahead of the Holocaust, lived in a rooming house by herself, and worked in an umbrella factory for $3 a week. I am not xenophobic. I'm not a nativist. I love that term, nativist. I was accused at a recent debate on a college campus. The speculation was I was a multi-generational American. I was told by a professor that my problem was that I was Eurocentric. Isn't it amazing that because my family traces its roots back to Europe that was a problem? She was from Peru. I didn't see that as being a problem. but somehow the fact that my family came from Europe for her was a problem. Racism knows no color, folks. People who are racist, and they come in every flavor, and they perpetrate their racism against people of every other flavor. We should never look at another person and make value judgments based on their race or based on what their ethnicity is or what the origins of their family was. As Martin Luther King said, you judge a person by the content of their soul, not the color of their skin. But the other side plays that game again and again and again, and I'm going to ask you to please resolve that in the coming year. You stand up to those bullies. You call them out every chance you get. That's why we have a First Amendment. We've got to stop being timid about standing up for our rights. To be intimidated by people who are bullying us makes as much sense as apologizing to the thug who punches you in the face and then apologizing to the thug for allowing your nose to get in the way of their fist. And that has to stop. There's one other issue that I want to raise with you before I sign off this evening, and it's an important issue. I saw an article today where a conservative website was furious, apparently, that Obama provided a pay raise to federal employees. And I know that there are conservatives who don't like the federal government. Well, let me tell you, the federal government has an important mission to carry out. The government isn't the solution. All too often it becomes the problem, not because of the work of dedicated civil servants who, as I started saying at the beginning of the program, truly understand the importance of the work they do. But as I said when I met with Senator Al D'Amato back in the early 80s, that I had come to the unhappy conclusion that I was not able to get my money's worth from my own efforts when I went to work every day, not through any fault of my own or those folks who I immediately worked with, but through the fault of the government that employed me. And this was back in the early 80s. Don't take your frustration out on civil servants. I believe that civil servants have a vital mission for America. When they don't do the mission properly, when the government doesn't provide for Americans what it should be providing, starting with national security, blame the people at the top of the food chain. There's a wonderful expression in Yiddish that when you translate it says that when a fish goes bad, it smells from the head. I know you may get frustrated with the agents. I assure you, the ones I've spoken to and the ones I've heard about from other people, they are as angry as I am, and if it's possible, they might be angrier. They understand the importance of those laws that are not being enforced. They understand how this government is undermining national security and the middle class and the American dream for Americans. They don't want this to happen any more than you or I. If you're angry, vent your anger in the proper direction. It's the fault of our government. It's the fault of our alleged leaders. It's the fault of members of Congress who, when you speak to them, unroll a survey and says, well, you know, I'd love to vote for a particular piece of legislation, or I'd love to speak out against something else, but I have a contract with this company, and they did a survey, and the survey says that my constituents expect me to be more conservative, less conservative, wear a green tie and have a crew cut. We can't have leaders running around chasing surveys. I understand the importance of surveys, but I also understand that we've never, or it's been quite a while since we've had some true statesmen and stateswomen in office. A statesman or a stateswoman, a leader, is somebody who takes a position that's principled and then sells the reason for that position to his or her constituents. It's not that hard. When I participated in a debate in Seattle, Washington, at Central Washington University, there were quite a few very loud, very irate demonstrators screaming at me. By the time I got done explaining my position, the protesters, folks, the protesters wanted my autograph, wanted to have a photograph taken with me. I'm not brilliant. There's nothing great about what I'm doing. It's just about dispelling the myths, getting people to understand the truth, not the BS that passes for news these days, not the BS that passes for information by our government. When you have a Labor Department that can, with a straight face, tell you that we have a 7.1% unemployment rate, then you know you're listening to a pack of liars. The unemployment rate is a multiple of that. It's a how dare you moment. How dare you? We are that stupid that we are going to sit home and listen to these unemployment statistics and accept this as being real. It's a lie. It is no less of a lie than the kid who comes home and tells his parents, well, I may have been flunking math, but I finally got an 80 on the exam, and the parents, to the kid's shock, open the envelope with the exam in it because he was hoping they wouldn't see it, and they realized to their horror that he got 80% of the first question right and got the next 9 all wrong. So, yeah, he got 80 on question 1, but overall got like, you know, a 5. But partial answer, you know, 80 on question 1. That's how they're computing our unemployment rate. They ignore the people who have run out of benefits. They ignore people who are no longer looking for a job. They ignore all these Americans, millions of them, who are now living below the poverty line. But what difference does it make, as somebody would say? You can't make this stuff up. As always, I have to tell you, it's a delight to visit with you at the end of the week. I hope you've enjoyed the program. We have a new year coming up, so let me end my show this evening by wishing everybody out there a very happy, healthy, safe, peaceful, and successful new year. And, of course, there's very different ways of measuring success. I hope that the new year is successful for you in whatever way that you wish it would be. That's my wish for you. I want to remind all of you to please go visit those two websites, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org. I remind you that democracy is not a spectator sport. Please, folks, for your New Year's resolution, make it your commitment to yourself, because at the end of the day, you're the one who faces yourself in the mirror when you wake up in the morning. Lately, I've been scaring myself more and more. I guess it goes along with all the gray hair. But please, make that promise to yourself that for this coming year, you will live up to your obligations as a citizen in this great democratic republic and get your voice heard and make certain that we stop getting pushed around by those folks who don't have our best interests at heart. Remember, democracy is not a spectator sport. Happy New Year, everybody. Have a great weekend coming up. Good night for now.